Welcome to the London Walks podcast.
Thanks for joining us again on the London Walks podcast. This month, we are looking at London transport. A little later on, I'll be catching the number 38 to Clapton Pond with Andy. Andy will also be talking to a London Underground busker. But before then, we're going underground with Andy and our London Walks colleague, Fiona. Mind the gap.
We've got the Metropolitan line running. We've got lots of people using it. Chemists along the line did quite a good business selling a thing called Metropolitan Tonic, which was a sort of refreshing, reviving thing. And you stumbled out of the station overcome with fumes. Be revived. Eventually they encouraged the drivers to grow beards, presumably in the hope that that would sort of filter out some of the fumes. And rather optimistically, they had a poster which broke down the sort of chemical composition of London smog, you know, above ground, the sort of fogs of London. And London was much foggier in those days, so, you know, maybe there was less disparity. But it breaks down all what's in fog, and then at the bottom it says, there is no fog on the underground.
So I'm here with Fiona, who's a brilliant guide. She's a city guide, and also, you're just about to finish your blue badge course as well in February. I went on her, the Lore of the Underground walk the other day, which I thought was fantastic. Really fantastic. And you talked a little bit about the ethos of the tube, which I thought was interesting. What did you mean by that?
Well, I think there is, I mean, the sort of the golden age of the tube was in the 1930s, when you have very strong characters in charge. And there's a lot of the sort of, if you look at the advertising from that era, lots of posters where it's sort of, it's warm and bright and it's all cosy, yeah. Sort of lovely golden glow on the tube and things. Yeah. One of my favourite posters, The Lure of the Underground, where people are sort of almost being sucked physically into the underground. And it's a really carefully constructed idea that the underground is safe and warm and cosy, and quite different to something like the New York Metro, where if you think about the beginning of the credits of Cagney and Lacey, they have a shootout on the subway. That stands in for edgy and dangerous, certainly in the 1980s, maybe less so now. But a lot of people come to London and go, oh, look, well, you've got comfy seats. They're padded.
Metaphorically and literally speaking, you go into a kind of zone, don't you? I spent a lot of my time on the tube either, you know, fretting or kind of daydreaming or sleeping. I mean, I sleep all the time on the tube.
Quite often I read, but when I don't have anything to read with me, I find myself going, oh, what am I going to do for this 12 minutes that I've got? And actually, it's a little moment when you can just sort of pause.
Gather your thoughts.
You know, it's a little gap in the day when there isn't anything else to do.
You can't go anywhere.
No, we are.
In the Olympics, that people were talking, chatting, it broke all those kind of underground etiquettes.
Yeah, for sort of 2 or 3 weeks during the Olympics, people were just stoking up conversations. You'd see someone in a kind of official-looking tracksuit and go, oh, hello, who are you? Or volunteers and things like that. And as soon as they finished, sort of the day after, all that just went straight back to, I'm not talking, on the tube.
Yeah. I mean, what I think is brilliant about it as well is that your particular walk is the detail as well, because you're just going from A to B and you don't pick on this. Often you're in a rush.
Yes.
Doing brilliant stuff.
And the stuff that I found, you know, when I went exploring to do the walk that I never knew was there. There's a tunnel at Embankment Station I never knew existed. And it often has art displays and sort of, you know, displays of posters that have been specially commissioned for exhibitions or for anniversaries and things like that. And floodgates at Embankment. And I'd never noticed them before. Walked past them thousands of times. It's really lovely to be able to dig out those little details and share them.
And you were talking about on the anniversary, 150th anniversary, they took a train through, an old train through Baker Street.
Yep.
And you pointed out the soot after 3 days. And yet, you can imagine, you know, 100 years of that before.
Well, the interesting thing about the 150th anniversary is people went, let's have a steam train. Everyone, yay! Whereas the 100-year anniversary, no one have thought a steam train was a good idea because they were only just getting rid of them at that point. So the sort of outer areas of the Metropolitan still had steam trains running, 1960s and probably, I don't know the exact date, but probably a bit later. So at that point, it was kind of old, outdated, dirty technology, whereas now, 50 years on from that, we go, nostalgic. But yes, if you imagine the amount of steam and smoke from each train, absolutely filthy. But air above ground was much filthier in those days as well. So if you think about the smogs and the fogs of Sherlock Holmes's London, then actually maybe having smog on the platform was not that much worse than above ground.
What is the air quality like now? Because I read there was, this is from Wiki, I don't know if this is true, but at the beginning, about 10 years ago, they did an experiment there, and they worked out that it was 73 times worse, the air quality on the tube, than in the streets above. And it was that someone worked out that a 20-minute journey on the Northern Line was like having a cigarette, one cigarette. But that's not the case anymore, is it? I mean, the air quality is quite good, isn't it?
I don't know. I've not come across that. But what they have
It won't
done...
affect your lungs going on your walk,
no,
though, will it?
No, one walk, you should be fine. And the risk of any one journey ending in a fatality is one in 300 million.
Wow, okay.
So that's pretty good. But what they've done in recent years, as much to do with heat as air quality, is they've installed fans in quite a few stations. If you look at the bottom escalators, there's often quite big fans there. And because it is a very deep, closed system, quite hard to ventilate it.
Right.
So there's been various innovations. And the new tubes at King's Cross at the moment, there is an exhibition showing some stuff about what the next design of rolling stock is going to be. And they've got air conditioning built in.
Well, that's one of the things. It's kind of changing. It's very dynamic, isn't it? It's like a kind of... It's a bit of a monster. A friend of mine who hasn't been here for London for 5 years, when we arrived at King's Cross, is like, wow, well, this has completely changed.
Yeah. And
by the map.
It changes.
Yeah.
Because at the moment, Bond Street, there isn't an interchange at Bond Street. So if you look at the maps now, the Central Line and the Jubilee don't meet. Gloucester Road has dropped off the Piccadilly because he's not stopping there. They do actually go around and change the maps. And you think about the maps on each carriage, you get the kind of line of that route. The Jubilee line at the moment has about four or five stickers, and there's eight of those maps on each carriage. You think about the person whose job it is to put up the stickers. For about 3 weeks before anything changes, they'll be there each night in the depot putting them up. And they do, you know, they're very neatly done. They all line up.
And
I've had people on the walk going, my God, that's amazing that... They bother to tell you that the trains aren't stopping somewhere. We would never get told that at home.
Well, that's a wonderful thing which I think you pick up in your walk. The colour schemes and all the detail to get people from A to B as efficiently as possible. Which, of course, you don't think about at all when you're travelling on it.
No.
I mean, this map is incredible, actually. Was it Harry?
Harry Beck, 1930s.
Yeah. And there's a couple of tubes, isn't there? Is it the Edgware Road and Paddington, which is quicker to walk rather than...
Yes, probably Paddington and Edgware. Bayswater and Queensway. Queensway to Notting Hill Gate, Lancaster Gate, somewhere around there. There's bits that look quite slow on the tube, but are much, much quicker on foot. But it's not a map, it's a diagram. So it tells us what you need to know while you're on the trace, but it's not geographically accurate. But there's this strange thing that happened that each line started by different investors, different individual companies, and it was just where they thought they could make money. So there's no sensible planning in the early days, no overview at all. And then you get to the 1930s when it's nationalised, it all comes together as one system. And you get people who take an awful lot of care over it, like Frank Pick, who was incredibly pernickety man, and, you know, everything had to be just so. And his idea was all about the customer should feel like a guest.
Right.
They should walk into a ticket hall and feel like they've been invited. And they shouldn't have to stress and worry about it. It should be obvious where they go. The flow of people through the station should be lovely and smooth. And so these two sort of different elements have come together to a system that works pretty well most of the time. And yet London has spent a lot of time complaining about it.
So you're doing...
I'm doing Hidden London, exploring the little alleyways and the back streets and the nooks and crannies of the city.
I mean, I should say we're here at Monument. It's pouring outside, or at least it was.
It was.
And they say on the tube, inclement weather. They never use that phrase, do they, anywhere else apart from on the tube?
Inclement weather.
Inclement weather, don't slip over.
Yeah, due to the inclement weather, it might be wet. No, really?
Brilliant. All right, thank you very much, Fiona. Good
thank
luck
you.
On your walk. I think it was brilliant.
Thank
and
you.
It's great, actually, because, you know, some people might worry about the being able to hear, but that's not the case at all, because it actually works quite well acoustically, doesn't it?
Well, it's good, because we started it last year for the anniversary, and I didn't know whether it was going to work at all. The whole idea of taking group on and off trains and things, I thought, oh, this might be chaos, it might be a disaster. But delightfully, it seems to work fine.
And it's good now, isn't it? I mean, it used to be a time when the kind of Northern Line would just stop everywhere.
Yeah, and you don't notice. It's one of those things that changes gradually, and it's only when you think back, hang on, when I was young... Yeah, there was graffiti on all the trains, and it was, much slower.
And not the case anymore.
No. Oh, no.
Thank you, Andy and Fiona. Every Tuesday morning, you can join Fiona on her walk, The Lure of the Underground, at 11 a.m. from Baker Street Tube. The London Walks podcast will return very soon with part two of our London Transport podcast. Thanks for listening.
The London Walks podcast was compiled, produced, and presented by Andy Hallett and Adam Scott Goulding. For details of the full programme of London Walks, London's best guided walking tours, go to www.walks.com. The London Walks podcast was an APB production.